Okay, good evening. I'm going to share with you a halacha that is relevant to, I would say, mostly myself, and probably, wouldn't want to say certainly, but possibly to the exclusion of all else in this room, but an interesting halacha or an application of halacha, which is found in the, which is found originally in the Yerushalmi, a very frightening statement is that Hanishal Hareze Maguna, which literally means that the one who is asked the question is to be despised. And the way that this is interpreted by the later Mefarshim is that if a rabbi is asked the question of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, then he is, number one, held in this regard in somewhat of a, you know, as the Rishami calls him, somewhat despicable. And the Mefarshim go on to say, and I'm reading now from the Ar-Shulchan, V'hanishal hareza shofes gamim, that if a person is asked a question regarding Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, and God forbid the person regarding whom the question was asked passes away, so then the rabbi or the posek, whoever it is considered to be partially responsible for that person's death. Shehayu lo lidros baradim, that he should have taught earlier in public the Pikuach Nefesh Dochas HaShabbos. He should have taught the Dina properly so that no one would have had any questions. That's a very, very tall order for any rabbi. I'm certainly glad that all of you came out this evening, but clearly there's only so much that I can do. This is actually the second time that I'm giving this year in the community. I gave it first 4 years ago. I've written about it twice, and inevitably, sometimes it takes a few weeks, but a few weeks, a few months, after a presentation is made, so a question comes up. So listen, we do our best, but in an effort to once again spread the word and remind everyone how important it is, how critical it is, that we be familiar with these halachos and we understand what's at stake, specifically at a time when we can think about it, we can ask questions, so that we avoid finding ourselves in a situation on Shabbos where, amidst the confusion and the uncertainty, decisions are made which may, unfortunately, at times impact on the well-being, the health, or potentially even the life of another individual. So certainly there's no limit to how many times we should and could discuss this very important topic. The question of dealing with situations with the Pikuach Nefesh and Shabbos is a very difficult topic to discuss because one would never want to present anything having to do with Shabbos in a manner, in a light, that would lead one to believe that Shabbos is not important, or it's not that important, that after all, it's only Chilul Shabbos. Clearly, if we were speaking about any area of Chilul Shabbos, potentially dealing with a malacha, so we would see to it that we would be careful to the extent, as we know, that we sometimes go to that which appears to some to be on extraordinary extremes to avoid being Mechallel Shabbos. On the other hand, if you just step a little inch or two in the other direction, so now we're dealing with human life. And so either way, there's a lot at stake, and at times there appears to be that which is really just an apparent clash between the two. What I hope we can walk away with tonight is that if we can understand how we have to act under certain circumstances, so the truth is there really is no conflict, there's no clash, and we just need to know the appropriate way to act and how to react to any situations that will come up. And now I'm going to try to give this evening somewhat of a detailed overview of the relevant halachos and obviously open the floor to any questions that may come up as I'm speaking. Feel free to interrupt at any point. But understand, of course, that even with the lumdus alone, we could spend many, many hours discussing this topic. In fact, I've actually realized now that I've discussed this more than once, because in terms of the lumdus of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, I know I've given at least two shiurim, not so much from a halachic, practical perspective, but from the lumdus. So there really, once again, is a lot potentially to discuss, but tonight's presentation is supposed to be more practical than conceptual. And once again, it's only an overview, because obviously there are so many situations that could and very well may arise that we cannot necessarily touch upon at this point. I'm going to introduce tonight's discussion with, I would say, hopefully no more than 10-minute overview of the general dinim regarding refuah on Shabbos. That is, taking medication and healing oneself or someone else on Shabbos. Perhaps provides us with a way to segue into the question of pikuach nefesh. But of course, there is a great topic of discussion regarding refuah in general, and really most of the situations that we encounter on Shabbos having to do with health are hopefully not really life and death questions, but they're more the everyday questions which certainly come up probably on a weekly basis, and that's not the purpose of this evening's shiur, but I'm going to spend, once again, hopefully no more than 10 minutes, just to briefly review the non-pikuach nefesh issues. We know that on Shabbos there is a rabbinic prohibition for a person to take medications or apply any medical therapeutic techniques in under certain circumstances because of the fact that Chazal were concerned that this would lead to the malacha of tochein. We know that one of the lamates malachos, one of the 39 malachos, is grinding, taking a solid substance and grinding it into small particles. And it was very common centuries ago, and perhaps today as well, not as common, but in certain circumstances people still do this to this day, to take certain herbs and spices and actually crush them into small particles, dust particles, or small salt-like particles, which would then be taken as some sort of remedy. Now this would constitute a malacha d'oraisa, and therefore Chazal, looking to prevent the masses from being nisal in this area, made a gezeira in general that people are not permitted to take medication and not permitted to act in a way in which they are essentially healing themselves on Shabbos. Now, this does not apply to anything that a person does because there are certain things that people do which are not considered technically refuah. So, for example, removing a splinter from one's finger, removing an insect sting, stopping bleeding if a person's bleeding covered. So these, while they are to a certain extent some forms of intervention where people go ahead and try to react to certain, you know, pains and the like that come up, they're not considered refuah. Refuah is when a person does something for the purpose of either removing pain or discomfort or actually bringing about some healing process. So for tonight's presentation, again for the 7 minutes I have remaining, we're going to talk briefly about three categories. Now the post can actually discuss more than that. There may be as many as five different categories of people who are suffering from various ailments. We're going to talk about three. The first one is what's called in the post a mechus ba'alma. A mechus ba'alma means a minor discomfort. A person who, let's say, has a common cold or a minor headache or a stiff neck or a sore throat. So these common discomforts are situations which may come up, like I said, in a household almost any Shabbos. And typically speaking, all forms of refuah are prohibited in these particular situations. One is not permitted, al pidin, to take an aspirin, to take a Tylenol for a minor headache. One is not permitted to go ahead and take an over-the-counter or even a prescription medication if the only purpose is just to remove some minor discomfort or pain. Now I should say that in a situation where a person takes medications every day, so then there may be room for leniency in this regard, even if the medication is only being taken for something which is technically a mechus b'alma. So in that situation it's worthwhile to ask a question, very likely be okay. A person who takes allergy medication on a regular basis, so sometimes if they miss one day, so it may cause additional discomfort the next day, so every day's dose may be considered almost more preventative than actually reactive. So in that situation, many poskim would permit one to take medication. So if you have any questions, you should ask. But that's the first category of what we call a mechus b'alma. The next category is perhaps the more common one, which we're familiar with, and that is what's called a chole, a person who is sick already, but a chole she'en lo sakana. A person who does not in any way whatsoever suffer from anything which is potentially life-threatening, but rather a person has an ailment, an injury, some disease or something, which makes the person feel very weak to the point where a person either feels a tremendous amount of pain all over their body, or they basically feel that they need to lie down. Essentially, they can't function normally. When a person has a minor headache, when a person has a sore throat, so when they get distracted, they can easily forget about what it is that's bothering them. A chole she'en bo sakana will not be able to just forget about it. A person who is really sick, a person who has a flu, a person who has a fever, so it's going to typically knock a person off their feet, and they're not going to be able to function normally. in a situation where a person is a cholish emo shakana, so here the gezeira of taking medication doesn't apply. We're familiar with the concept in general that although Chazal at times made certain restrictions that they imposed upon us, nevertheless these restrictions were relaxed in certain situations. And when it comes to refuah, healing oneself on Shabbos, for a cholish emo shakana, there is no prohibition of taking medication. So on a practical, just to talk very practically here, if a person once again has a fever, if a person has a severe headache, certainly a migraine, doesn't even have to qualify necessarily as a migraine, but a very severe headache which prevents a person from being able to really function normally, a person can't read, they can't sit up, they have to lie down. So in a situation like this, they are permitted to go ahead and take medication in order to deal with that discomfort. Not only that, a cholish ein bo sakana is permitted to violate any issur d'rabbanan on Shabbos in order to provide him or herself with some discomfort. So the most common application of this is that a person who is a chole is permitted, or someone else who wants to assist that individual is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do anything that could bring this person some comfort or to relieve them of their symptoms. So a common situation that comes up, a person is not feeling well, needs a certain medication, but doesn't have it. The only way to get it is to go to the pharmacy. So normally we wouldn't just go shopping on Shabbos, but over here to go to the pharmacy, to walk to the pharmacy, or to send it on to the pharmacy for me, and to arrange to have the medication given now, and I'll pay after Shabbos, so that's certainly okay. Technically, if I have to pay on Shabbos, that would be okay as well, because purchasing items on Shabbos, even using money, would only qualify as an issur d'rabbanan. It happens to be that most of the local pharmacies don't require people to pay on Shabbos. They're familiar with us in the community already, and even if you don't have an account with them, they usually allow you, under normal circumstances, I think most of the local pharmacies, to go ahead and take what you need on Shabbos, and you'll finish up with them afterwards. But technically, if you were in an area where you didn't have this luxury, and they said, pay now, or we can't help you, so you're going to be able to pay on Shabbos. You can go ahead and have a non-Jew turn on the lights in the house, turn off the lights in the house, heat up water, you know, whatever the case may be, the non-Jew may do anything, and in case it's not clear, you don't have to be meramis, you don't have to hint to the guy. In this situation, you could say straight out that I have a person in my house who's sick, and this is what I need. Again, we're talking right now about non-tikuach nefesh issues. Nobody's life is in danger. This is a person who's very sick, or who's a person, again, very sick with a, not with a capital V, a person who's just very uncomfortable. And this, in these situations, a person can once again rely on this kula of asking a non-Jew to do anything. And again, there would be no restrictions as far as refuah is concerned. Now, some people may be a little concerned, well, how do you know if you're really technically a cholish ein bo sakana? What's the threshold? Clearly, it's a very subjective concept. There's no, we could, perhaps a person can use a thermometer to determine what their temperature is, but there's no way to actually determine using any, standard uniform measuring device as to whether or not a person is a cholish ein bo sakana. Really, it's just a nefesh b'yama. So basically what the post can say is that every person should decide for themselves. There are certain people that could withstand pain more than others. So if there's a person who has some pain but is able to live with it, and someone else has a very low tolerance for pain, so then they can treat themselves a cholish ein bo sakana, even though the situation may be exactly the same. I will tell you as well that I remember once when I was, actually this was a long time ago, and then many years ago, I was in shul on Rosh Hashanah, and I had a terrible headache, and I wanted to take a medication, but I didn't know if I should do it. I couldn't determine whether or not it was really bad enough. And of course, it was Rosh Hashanah, so it's one day a year, of course, you don't want to do the wrong thing. So I was in yeshiva at the time, so I asked the postig there, and he said to me, well, do you feel that you need to lie down? So I told him quite honestly, it's Rosh Hashanah, so I don't think I would go back to my room to lie down. I would just probably just live with it. But he said, well, if it wasn't Rosh Hashanah, what would you do? Would you lie down? So I said, yeah, man, if it wasn't Rosh Hashanah, I had nothing to do, I'd probably lie down. So he said, so then you could take medication. In other words, you didn't have, if the circumstances were such that, right, have company over, so that, I'm not going to lie down, yeah, but that which you're suffering from, is so uncomfortable that normally, you know, it would interfere with your ability to function properly, and you actually would feel that you needed to lie down. So he felt that that was sufficient over here to warrant taking medication. So that's the concept of Echol Esheh Ein Bo Sakana. With that, we now move into the category, the final category that we're going to discuss this evening, of Echol Esheh Yesh Bo Sakana, a situation where a person faces either that which we know for sure to be a life-threatening illness, or there's a person who has an injury, or there's a situation which is potentially life-threatening, or as we're going to discuss as well, I'm not even sure. Quite frankly, I'm not a doctor, and I cannot determine definitively whether or not there is an actual danger here, but I'm concerned, and I have reason to be concerned, as we'll discuss in a moment, that there may be something life-threatening, and that's when we need to consider what else we can and should do when this happens on Shabbos. I'll mention at this time another personal story that happened to me the last time I gave this year, which was, I think I said 4 years ago, I think I told the story as well, but I repeat it now, and that is that when I first came to TNET, so I don't remember if this was necessarily the first week or the second week or third week, but within the first few weeks of my arrival, someone had come to me on Shabbos and I had a question regarding a newborn. I remember exactly who the family was, and the baby right now is probably about 7 years old. So the baby was a newborn at the time, as I remember. And they had a question because the baby wasn't breathing properly during the night, and was coughing a lot, and they were a little concerned, and they decided they were going to take the baby to the doctor. Now, they didn't come to me, you know, shaking, and the mother and the father weren't crying, and they weren't holding the baby limp in their arms. No, basically the baby was there, but they were concerned, and this was the type of thing that parents would obviously typically go to the doctor. And they had a question of how they should walk, because they had to walk out of the area. So whether or not they should take the stroller, or whether they should carry the baby, or once they should carry the baby together, so they walk pucker vidal and amos. They were asking only the best way to get to the doctor. So the question wasn't should they go, but just the best way to get there. And we had thought about it together, and I helped them come up with an interesting plan as to how they were going to get to the doctor in the, you know, choosing the path of least halachic resistance, if you will. And then, okay, so that matter ended, and I imagine I got to the doctor, and the doctor gave the baby what they did, and everything was all fine and well. So later that week, I got a call from someone who was, someone who I speak to, well, at least I spoke to then, not as often now, but I spoke to at some point quite regularly, a big Talmid Chacham from Lakewood who would call me all the time for money. But in exchange for money, he would talk in learning, and he would share the Ritzara and whatever I was learning at that time, immediately on the spot, he'd be able to share some nice insights, a real, real fine Talmid Chacham. And he just sat and learned all day. He was in the posek, he was in the rabbi in the shul, so he would always be very interested to hear, so what shilas did he get, what shilas, that's what he always wants to know. Because I guess this is very exciting for someone who sits in a base medrash, so tell me some of the shilas he got. So I was reflecting on that week, and I told him, well, this is a shilas, and here's how I dealt with it. And he said to me, are you serious? I said, what? He said, is that really the way you answered the question? I said, yeah. He said, are you a doctor? I said, no. He said, there was a baby that was not breathing properly through the night, and you were telling them how to walk to the doctor? I said, yeah, why? I was thinking maybe I should have told him to go home and don't worry about it. He said, they should have gotten in the car right then and there and ran to the doctor. I said, come on. They didn't seem panicked. Why should I be panicked? And he asked the question again. He said, are you a doctor? He said, you know, I'll call you back. He hung up the phone. He calls back 10 minutes later. And he said, I just spoke to him. I don't remember who he just spoke to. But he said, I just spoke to him. He was the biggest postdoc in Lakewood. And he told me, you're absolutely 100% wrong. If you're dealing with a baby, we'll talk about adults later. But certainly if you're talking about an infant, and the infant's not breathing properly, so again, at that point, having been a parent of four children and known that these things just sort of happen, you know, times babies have, you know, difficult nights and they can't breathe properly through the night, but it's not the type of thing that the alarms went off in my head. So I just assumed, well, it was one of those situations, so therefore, yeah, walk to the doctor, it'll take 20, 25 minutes, and here's how you go. And he felt that that was not the proper way to go. That in a situation like this, people should be encouraged to do what they would do during the week. Now, maybe later we'll come back to that story and we can analyze it a little more. I want to introduce this topic to Cross Nefesh with that story, because I want you to realize, number one, that this topic, which, while, you know, we can say from today till tomorrow, you know, this is the way it has to be, and we can understand it from an intellectual perspective, we all have to recognize, and I'm admitting myself, the traps that we constantly fall into in terms of trying to understand the best, you know, what would be the best way to maneuver and to avoid Chol Shabbos. Right then and there, sometimes we have to stop and say, wait a second. So I'm reading to you now, and I didn't give out sources tonight, but I'm not going to read much to you, but the Aruch HaShulchan, again, in the introduction to this Siman in Shulchan Aruch, Shin Chafesh, writes, Pikuach Nefesh Dochas HaShabbos. Saving a life pushes off, literally pushes off Shabbos. She'ein l'cha davar she'omei b'pnei pikuach nefesh. There is nothing that would stand in the way of pikuach nefesh, except, of course, it goes on to say the big three, as they're called, avos hashtachavim, gil harayis, shfichas damim, adultery, and murder. But other than those three, everything in the Torah falls to the wayside when we're dealing potentially with saving a person's life. And he goes on to say, v'aser lihisma me'a v'chol shabbos v'chol shiyesh bo sakana. It is prohibited for a person to delay, to stop, to wait, when it comes to a situation where you're dealing with someone who has a life-threatening disease. Because the laws of the Torah are supposed to be compassionate, based on the principles and the foundations of chesed and shalom. And he says that one who is quick to act, one who is zealous in this regard, is to be praised. And in fact, the Rambam, when speaking about this very din, says something very fascinating. He says that when a person is an opportunity where they're faced with a pikuach nefesh situation on Shabbos, the ones who should carry out whatever acts are necessary to help this person should not be carried out by those who perhaps technically are not chayiv in Shabbos. So he says, first and foremost, goyim. And then he says, ketanim. You know, ketanim, after all, we're going to speak in the coming weeks about chinuch, so certainly we would want always to train our children properly, and it is not acceptable for a person to just give their child, a flick on the switch. But technically, at the end of the day, we know that a cousin is my chayiv in Shabbos, so if I'm faced with a situation where someone has to dial 911, so I would have thought, my kid's old enough, he knows how to do the 911, so tell my child to do it. Says the Rambam, no. Rather, it should be done, ayyidei gedolei Yisrael v'chachameim. It should be done by the great gedolim, the great and wisest and distinguished in the community, in order, says the Rambam, that people should understand that this is not something that should be taken lightly. And he goes and says, as we just saw in the Aruch HaShulchan, v'asol islameya, it is prohibited for a person to delay and to stop unnecessarily when faced with these situations, because as we know, when a person is faced with situations, potentially life-threatening illness or disease, so even a few seconds can make the entire difference. And so therefore, we need to sort of shatter the misconception that many of us walk around with. And again, I'm telling you that I've learned this in the past, but nevertheless, when faced with situations again and again, I must constantly recondition my way of thinking and remind myself, no, because at the end of the day, Shabbos comes every week. Right? We're not faced, Baruch Hashem, with pikuach nefesh questions every week. So we're trained, and we're accustomed to Shabbos, how important it is, Shabbos. And then when we're caught off guard and we're faced with the question of pikuach nefesh, so we really have to, we're not prepared. We're not in that frame of mind. We just say, Shabbos, get out of the way. Right? Our frame of mind normally is Shabbos, and I have to try to fit everything else in. But that's why we need to really stop and think at moments like this, when we can think with clarity and forthrightness, and really trying to think things through, that it is wrong to go ahead and to consider for a moment the question of Chil Shabbos when faced with the situation of Pikuach Nefesh. Now, and you may have questions, before you ask questions, I want to just add one thing I have to add now. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, after the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch presents things exactly the way I just did. So the Ramah follows immediately with a comment which would seem on the surface to run contrary to that which I just said. And the Ramah says, while it is true, I'm not denying, says the Ramah, that life is what's most important. For the Ashkenazim as well, we consider Pikuach Nefesh more important than Shabbos. True. However, says the Ramah, quotes those Rishonim, and there were few, that say, Im etzel asos, below dichoy, below ichor, ayyidei shinoi, says the Ramah, that if a person can and we're going to talk specifics later. Right now we're just talking conceptually in general terms. If a person can achieve their same goal, whatever it is that I need to do for this chola, for this patient, for this family member who's sick, who's in danger, if I can achieve the very same goal without compromising their position at all, but instead of doing it with an outright malacha, I'm going to do it with a shinoi, I'm going to do it in a way that will make this act no longer considered a malacha, but only prohibited in the Rabbanim. Or he goes on to say, if I can have it done through a non-Jew, as opposed to be done by a Jew, so he says this is better. And again, the Ramah stresses, and it must be stressed, that this is only if I'm certain, if I'm absolutely certain that I'm not compromising the well-being or the position of this individual. But if I could be sure, if I could be sure that in fact this person is going to be fine either way. So what's the difference if I drive to the hospital, if the non-Jew drives to the hospital, I trust him, he's my neighbor, he's a good driver. To the contrary, maybe he'll get him there quicker, so then fine. The Ramah says that would be better. It would be better for a person to avoid having to violate Shabbos if it can be done Ayyidei Akum. Now the reason why this is a little misleading is because it, once again, we seem to be retreating somewhat from this very, very important principle that we just put forth, namely, that no, that when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, when you're faced with the mitzvah of saving a person's life, so there is no Shabbos. So what we touched upon is a famous question, which is applicable actually in other areas of halacha as well, but right now we're talking about this. And the question is, again, on a conceptual level, how do we understand the clash? When you have this conflict between Pikuach Nefesh on the one hand and Shabbos on the other hand, so what happens? So Pikuach Nefesh wins, but how does Pikuach Nefesh win? Do we have what's called the situation of Chutra, which means it's like Shabbos becomes totally mutter, and everything which is normally prohibited on Shabbos is now permissible. And so therefore there's no need for me to go ahead and try to find, less problematic ways to do it. There is no problem. No problems at all. Shabbos is Chutra. The other way of looking at this is applying the concept of the terminology that is called the chuya, which means that Shabbos is not gone, and everything is not just automatically permissible, but it's pushed off, meaning whenever there's a conflict, so Pikuach Nefesh wins, but in each and every situation, we need to look carefully and to evaluate and to see whether or not it's proper to just go ahead and say, Shabbos is completely suspended. We're not going to say Shabbos is completely suspended. We're going to look at it once again as if every situation is potentially a conflict, and yes, Pikuach Nefesh wins, but if I can avoid having to violate Shabbos, so then perhaps, as Silakai said, we could have both. I can help this person, and I can continue to maintain the proper sanctity and the laws of Shabbos. Now, I have a responsibility to teach the Ramah, of course, because I wouldn't want to give you, number one, half the story, and we typically follow the position of the Ramah. But I do so, once again, reminding you that the majority of the Rishonim did not teach this way. The Ramah took that minority view, and later the Taz came along, and the Aruch HaShulchan, and say that they're very disturbed that the fact that the Ramah should have took this position. In fact, even the Mishnah Berurah is not clear exactly whether or not he fully accepts the Ramah. But the bottom line is, and I'll give you some practical cases in a moment, the bottom line is, we do essentially try to apply the Ramah, but only once again in situations where you are absolutely certain that the position, that the health of this individual is not compromised whatsoever. So let's talk about happy situations. A common, relatively common scenario, which could certainly come up, is a woman goes into labor on Shabbos. So if a woman goes into labor on Shabbos, there's no question, we don't have to establish right here, but that's a question of Pikuach Nefesh. Even though in most situations, if we have Hara, women survive childbirth and the children do as well, and even in those situations, if we hear from time to time that they didn't make it to the hospital on time, the woman gave birth in a taxi, we become so used and accustomed to the fact that most births are, Baruch Hashem, everything works out okay. But nevertheless, it's not a question of statistics. The act of childbirth, the experience of childbirth, is something which is considered certainly life-threatening both to the mother and the baby. And needless to say, we consider the health and the survival of this baby that's not even born at this point as to be something which is also in the category of Pikuach Nefesh. So this is certainly something that would warrant whatever is necessary to get the woman the immediate care that she needs. In most situations, again, this is not necessarily all situations, in most situations, if the person, the husband, let's say, chooses, instead of myself getting in the car and driving my wife to the hospital, if I call a taxi, or if I ask my non-Jewish neighbor to drive us, or if I call the ambulance, So nothing's lost, because anyway she's going to be sitting in the delivery room for the next 6 hours, and it's going to be a slow process, and so therefore it doesn't make a difference. The 5-10 minutes more, if that, is not really going to make any bit of a difference. So according to the Ramah, that would be the proper thing to do. And in fact, that's what we do. I should point out that you minimize other potential problems if you go that route, because although it is true that a person technically can get in the car and drive his wife to the hospital if she's in labor, what does he do when she gets there? All right, so they meet her at the hospital, and they come, and now they take him to the emergency room. So now he's got a car that's sitting there, and it says, move your car right away. And now, right, it's Shabbos. We don't say, my wife's in labor, so therefore I'm just going to go to the movies, I'm going to go shopping at Target, I'll come back later. No. Even Hutra means, as far as the Koach Nefesh is concerned. So is it so possible that I can just go ahead and park the car and turn the ignition off? It's a complicated question. Maybe we'll touch upon it a little later. But just now to understand that there are other secondary advantages to using the assistance of a non-Jew in a situation like that. Now the reason I gave that example is it's a very, very clear-cut example, I think, in most situations, where even a layperson, a person who's not trained, a person who's not a doctor, can be pretty sure that he's not taking any unnecessary risks by waiting the extra few minutes for the taxi to come or the ambulance to come as opposed to putting his wife in the car right then and there and driving. Most people can just assess the situation and know that that's so. But again, if a person has even a doubt, and again, this is something also we're going to have to talk about and stress more as we go on this evening, but if there's even a doubt, so then you must assume that you are incorrect and that this person needs immediate medical care, whatever you think would be appropriate to do in that situation, so that's what should be done. Another, yeah?
This whole
So there's only so much that we can talk about one. I'm going to talk in a few minutes about the emotional component, and we're going to talk about how that factors into all this, and you're correct. In other words, I'm talking on the one hand in specifics, but also in general terms. But I'll respond to that particular question. In a situation where a woman says, I need to go now, and no, I can't wait, forget the fact that it would be inappropriate for a person to question whether or not she's right or wrong, because it's actually a din of Shulchan Aruch as well, that if the patient says, this is what I need, then this is what you give the patient, even if the doctor says, no, you don't. So that's number one. But in addition, there's that, like you said, there's a psychological factor. There's the fact that a person right now is feeling a tremendous amount of stress, maybe trauma, and to go ahead and subject a person who's now already in the Pekuach Nefesh situation to even greater stress and trauma is something which would be absolutely wrong. So I agree with you. There's no question that if a woman says, I need to go now and I want you to drive me, well, I'll get better than that. The ambulance is here and the husband's here. And she says, I don't want to go in the ambulance. I want you to take me. So I would agree there as well that the husband should take her. So, and you are correct as well that in these situations, normally things are very overwhelming and confusing and we're not really sure what to do. So as I started off this evening saying that's exactly why we have to try our best right now when we could sit down and talk and we're not faced with that crisis to think things through as clearly as possible. But at the same time, I do agree with you that if and when you are faced with that situation and you don't know what to do, you're confused, you don't know what to do on the spot, so Pikuach Nefesh is the only thing that you should be thinking about at that moment. About a year ago, a little less than that, we had a Shev Brachos in my house on a Friday night, and in the middle of Shev Brachos, one of our guests fainted. He just passed out on the floor. You were there, right? Oh, you weren't there. All right, so you're shaking him. Okay, he fainted. So, again, I didn't ask any questions. I wasn't anything. His eyes were open, his eyes were closed. I didn't see anything. I just saw him go down, and I went right to the phone. I picked it up, 911, the ambulance was it. Whatever took them, 2-3 minutes, they were there. By the time the ambulance got there, he wasn't sitting up because we didn't let him sit up, but he was embarrassed. He was saying, I'm fine. The color had pretty much come back to his face. He was more or less, it was even a question, should he go to the hospital? And he did go to the hospital, it was the right thing to do. But then people around were clearing, does he have to go? So he's not sure what happened. He got a little hot, maybe a little wine, and he passed out. So if I would have stopped and I would have looked and evaluated the situation, I don't know, maybe yes, maybe no, so it could very, very possibly be that I would have made the decision, you know, the best thing to do is to wait. But the reason why that's not what I did, the reason why it's not what I did is because what would I have done on a Sunday, on a Monday or a Tuesday? I would have done just that. Again, I'm not a doctor. I know my limitations. I'm not able to assess a situation like that. So knowing, of course, that something like that could be life-threatening, immediately you go, the first thing you do is you call 911. I think. Doctor, is that the right thing to do? Good. Well, hold on a second. So that's what I did there. So I agree with you that there's a trap that we could all get caught in. So I like to think I did the right thing in that situation. We can't completely forget the fact that it's Shabbos, but if we're ever faced with that dilemma and we don't know what to do, so then there's no question that this person's life and the attention that this person needs must come first at all costs. Yeah.
If you're really Hutra, how could a functioning organization like Hatzalah rely on this? What would they rely on?
I'm not sure I understand the question. If it's Hutz, even if it's Tehuya.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean, so what should they do? They should say, let's give it to EMS?
They just go. So they don't analyze whether or not...
Well, of course they don't analyze, because, first of all, they don't know until they get there. They don't know until they get there, right? I think... When a call comes in to any EMS, they're not going to know what the situation until they get there. Even if the person says he's okay, so they know already, if you pick up a phone call 911, we're coming, whether or not you say he's okay or not. So for sure, for them to respond at that point is okay. Once they have the patient at hand and they look and they assess the situation, so then I think they may be, first of all, I don't even think an ENT has a right to go ahead and determine on their own whether the person goes to the hospital. If the person refuses to be taken to the hospital, correct me if I'm wrong, and they sign off on it, so that's the patient's right. But the EMT is never given that right. They're not in a position to make that absolute determination whether or not this person needs to go to the hospital or not. Now, I want to stress a number of other points. Number one, if it turns out that a person really was not a sakana, or a person, you know, I go ahead and I call the doctor, or I drive my child to the hospital, and by the time I get there, they say, oh, this is silly, this is nothing, it just has a headache, go home. So if that turns out, then one would think, perhaps, maybe I should feel a little bad, maybe I have to do tshuva, maybe this is something that did was a sin. So the Shulchan Aruch over here, the Mechaber, goes out of his way, and this is really atypical for the Shulchan Aruch to do this, and stresses that that's not so. The Shulchan Aruch gives an interesting case where the doctors are standing around, they're looking at a patient, and they assess that in order for this person to live, he needs a fresh fig. Halavai, life was that easy. The person's about to die. He needs a fresh fig. So he's got 10 people in the room, the 10 runners, and he says, get me a fig. So they all run in opposite directions. And everybody's running, and each one of them comes back with a fig. So the first one he gets there, obviously, he gives the patient the fig. He takes it, and now he's, you know, stands up, and Geshavis, he's leaving. Meanwhile, the 9 other ones, huffing and puffing, come back. So you would think that they would become somewhat depressed and respond and say, oh no, what did I do? I was Mechal Shabbos. So says the Shulchan Aruch, no, you did nothing wrong. To the contrary, you did a mitzvah, and God will reward you for the mitzvah Pikuach Nefesh. What do you mean Pikuach Nefesh? The person, by the time I got there, you're gone. You left. Or let's say the other situation, which wouldn't be as happy, I get back and the person's died already. So here, I went out of my way to save this person's life, and I got there, and you see that all my efforts were for naught. So over here we need to understand, going into it, know that whenever a person is engaged in an act of pikuach nefesh, so whether or not in the end their efforts are ultimately needed, whether they're successful, is completely irrelevant. And I'm going to tell you more than that. I heard today, I listened to a tape from Rabbi Abraham, from the author of the Mishnah Avram, and he was told a fascinating stock. I couldn't believe this. I had to listen to it twice to make sure I understood it. He told the following psak that he heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Now, it's not a very common or practical scenario, but it's a fascinating one. He says, imagine if there's a patient who's not feeling well, all right? So he's having chest pains. And his doctor is the one who's most familiar with his situation, his condition. So it's true that I can call Hatzalah, but I want to speak to his doctor. I want his doctor to look at it. His doctor lives 20 miles away. So what do? I pick up the phone and I call his doctor. His doctor is sitting at his Shabbos table with his family. And I say, Dr. Goldberg, I have, my father here, my brother, whoever it is, and he has chest pains. and the doctor said, I'm going to come. And the doctor heads on his way. 5-10 minutes later, the patient dies. The person dies. So, again, not a very common situation. What would you do in that situation? In 15 minutes from now, 20 minutes from now, the doctor is going to arrive because he has to drive 20 miles. So he's only 5 minutes on the way. He has a cell phone in his car. Should I call him? I would have thought, of course you call him. It's the right thing to do. After all, anyway, he's driving another 15 miles. It's, for him at this point, it's really, it's for nothing. It's Chol Shabbos, right? So instead, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in this situation, no, don't call him. He says, he is engaged right now in the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. That's what he's doing. Every mile that he drives is a mitzvah. You have no heter to pick up the phone and call him. What are you calling him for? The person is dead already. There's no Pikuach Nefesh for you. So it's such a fascinating situation where you, on your perspective, so you see the reality the way it is, this person's gone. But as far as the doctor is concerned, so he is engaged in the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh is, again, ultimately, we're motivated by the interest of the patient, but once the ball gets moving, once I'm already in the mode and I'm acting in a manner to help this person, so it's almost irrelevant what the status of the patient is in this particular situation. So obviously I have to continue to evaluate, and if and when it changes that I'm aware of it, so I have to, you know, we have to be in touch with reality. This perspective is also very important. There was a situation about a year ago in the community where there was someone who had to take the child to the hospital on Shabbos, and when it got there, they found out that it wasn't really necessary. And the husband felt really, really bad. A really very, very sincere person, a very God-fearing Jew, and he walked around haunted by this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we discussed it actually months later when he was still sort of, and I could not say enough to reassure him that you did the right thing. You did the right thing. Again, I was inspired by his dedication to Shabbos and his concern even so many weeks later that he had done the wrong thing. Meanwhile, he had come to me in that situation. I had given him the thumbs up. And he wasn't even questioning it after the fact whether it was the right thing to do, but it felt so wrong, so that's not the proper perspective that we should have. The proper perspective we should have is that if I even have a doubt, then this is what I need to do. And regardless of what happens later, regardless of what I find out when I get to the hospital, good news, bad news, none of it matters. I was engaged in the mitzvah of Pikuach Nefesh, and the one who steps up to the plate, as the Machaber said, Harei Zeh Meshubach, he is to be praised for his actions, and that's the way it is. Now, how do we know if a person is in a state of sakana? How do we know in these situations? So we're going to talk about a few different ways or mechanisms that we should, the halakha recognizes as being valid sources to determine whether or not a person is actually in a state of sakana. The first and most obvious, I suppose, is a doctor. If there's a doctor or even a nurse, someone who has some medical expertise, an EMT, and they look at the situation, they evaluate it, and they say, this person is in danger, this person needs a doctor, needs to get to a hospital, this person needs something, immediate medical attention, so then it would be improper, needless to say, it would be improper for anyone to question that. And even if there were, let's say, two doctors in the room, and one said, this guy needs to get to the hospital, and the other one says, no, he's fine, so I don't have to tell you. We're not playing dice with a person's life. On Tuesday, anybody would say, well, I'm going to go to the hospital, be sure. So the same thing should be done on Shabbos. So number one is the doctor. Number two is the chola himself or herself. If a person, the patient, says, I'm experiencing something which doesn't feel right, I think this may be serious. So then we don't require that person to go ahead and explain. You know, Barachal Bitzchak Tana, well, here's what I'm feeling and here's where it goes. Again, if a person calls a doctor, it has to make sense. A person has three bowls of cholent and then feels a pain over here, so it could very well be that, you know, they just ate too much cholent. So when they call the neighbor over as a doctor, and the doctor will say, yeah, how much cholent did you eat? Okay, so then maybe they'll determine that you'll just take a few tums and lie down, and hopefully you feel better in a few minutes. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, but if the chola says, no, this isn't right, so that's enough. If the chola says, I need more, I need to go to the hospital, I need to call 911, whatever it is, then that's what we do. And as I said already before, but I'm going to repeat now, the third person in the equation who could and should sometimes and must, whether they like it or not, be empowered with that, making that decision, is you. you, the person who is not the doctor, not the patient, but who's, and I guess statistically, most of us are not doctors, and if any of us are ever involved in these situations on Shabbos, it will probably be with someone else, not with ourselves. So these are the situations we're going to be in the most, in this situation. So we have to make the decision if no one else is there. And every individual is empowered to make that decision. You can't reach any other conclusion. When you look at the Shulchan Aruch speaks about Pikuach Nefesh. Well, how do I know what's Pikuach Nefesh? After all, I never went to med school. How do I know what's Pikuach Nefesh? So you see implicit in that din is the fact that every person has to decide for himself. One must never factor in Shabbos into the equation of determining whether or not something is Pikuach Nefesh. And Josh, this is sort of the point that you touched upon before. I'm just going to try to reiterate now that the question of Shabbos may never factor into whether or not there's a danger here. Shabbos only comes in to play once I've determined, okay, that there's a danger. So can I, or should I, or is it possible to maneuver myself, navigate my way through this situation by not technically violating Shabbos and still getting this person the attention that they need? And even that thinking, it must be clear to me that that thinking itself is not interfering with the very process. If it's not clear, then I can't even allow myself to have these thoughts at that time. But when determining whether or not something is Pikuach Nefesh, I have to imagine it is Tuesday. It is not Shabbos, it's Tuesday right now, and I'm looking at the situation, and I want to evaluate, you know, is there potentially because of the situation over here? So, very often, the person who's the layman, once again, who doesn't have that training, has to make that determination. Now, if you look in Shulchan Aruch and in later sources, which perhaps even more up-to-date in this regard, there are certain specific symptoms and situations which are mentioned, which are considered by halacha to be pikuach nefesh situations. Now, I want to state what's probably obvious at this point, and that is that the pikuach nefesh in halachic terms is not really the same as a medical term. So I understand that if we were doing like triage in an emergency room, and they had to determine, you know, what's considered pikuach nefesh, so I give you a perfect example. My son, a couple of, it was Erev Yomtiv, it was on Sukkot. Erev Yomtiv, he stepped, hope I don't make anybody uncomfortable over here. He stepped on a toothpick. It's one of those thick ones and went really far up into his foot. Sorry. Okay, gross part is over. Anyway, so, you know, it was pretty horrible at the time. So I picked him up. It was on Erev Yom Tov. It wasn't Yom Tov. I lifted him up. I drove him to the emergency room. So I get to Holy Name Hospital thinking, you know, they're going to just whisk us in, which, you know, should never happen to anybody. But I was actually excited about, because in the past when I've gone here, you sit 4 hours and... So I go, okay, maybe actually we'll get some attention this time. We're just sitting there. And I'm always, do you see his foot? So, you know, and, you know, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes later we get in, and okay, they took it out. They did what they needed to do. Now, on Shabbos, if a person's faced with a situation on Shabbos where a, you know, something that large, you know, goes inside of anybody's foot, certainly child's foot, there's no question you're dealing over there with something that halakhically we would consider potentially life-threatening for many reasons. You know, they could puncture the vein, and who knows? I don't need to explain myself. You know, I see a large object which is impaled inside of a body of a person. That's called halakhically. That's already called something which is potentially life-threatening for many reasons. In Holy Name Hospital, they didn't consider it at that time to be so life-threatening. They didn't call down anybody from upstairs, and they took their time with it. And again, I'm not suing the hospital. I'm assuming that they did the right thing, and they know what they did fine. But there's no conflict here. So pikuach nefesh from a medical perspective is not necessarily the same thing as from a halakhic perspective. So some of the things that are mentioned is high fever with no known symptoms, internal bleeding, intense internal pain, any sort of compounded fracture, a deeper infected wound, and ingested poison, loss of consciousness. These are, again, they're obvious, but these are things that if a person wasn't sure, I don't know, you know, these are things which should be, you know, obvious telltale signs that you're dealing over here with something which could be life-threatening, and therefore it must be dealt with right away. Young children or infants, certainly we would hold perhaps to an even higher standard in this regard in the following respect, that we would say that if there's a child that is you know, that is exhibiting any behaviors which we would consider sometimes to be potentially life-threatening, so we would be even more concerned because of, you know, the frailty and the, you know, inability of a child to express himself and not knowing what's going on. If there was a young child that was displaying any behaviors that we would be concerned, which potentially would be life-threatening, we would take, you know, extreme, you know, concerns for that on Shabbos. Yeah? Jack, you want to say something now? Yes, so maybe we'll just, yeah.
We knew that somebody was a Amalek, and we know that it's supposed to kill a Amalek. Would you have, if you were a lefty, would you have to take the knife and put it to your right hand and say, well, I'm not allowed to murder, but if it's supposed to kill a Amalek, so I have to do it in a different way?
Well,
this is the only situation. Talking about Ramah, the lady...
No, it's not the only situation. Let's say talking about eating on Yom Kippur. Eating on Yom Kippur is another common scenario which comes up, where we say, okay, listen, the person's a Cholesh Yish Mosakana, they have to eat on Yom Kippur, but we're still going to try to eat Pachos Mikashir so that they can still avoid having to violate the Issachars of eating on Yom Kippur. And there are other situations. I mean, the example that you gave, while creative, wasn't a good one because there's a mitzvah to kill Amalek, so you would have to want to use your right hand and question whether you make a bracha beforehand. But you're not. Okay, I don't want to get off. No, but it's definitely different. There's, you're not allowed to kill someone, but there are times you're allowed to kill. If a guy's chasing me and he's trying to kill me, so I'm permitted to kill in self-defense. That's not an act of murder. That's an act. Okay, well, I definitely do want to. I don't want to get into this now, but I'd be happy to have an offline discussion with you on this more. What can be done for a person who's in a state of sakana? So really, anything that is necessary for the purpose of refuah, to relieve him from any sort of psychological stress or trauma, which we touched upon before, joining such a person to the hospital if the person wants it, even if the patient doesn't realize that the stress that they're under. If I suspect that the person is going to be uncomfortable, concerned, alone in the hospital, not to mention the fact that most people, everyone needs to have an advocate in the hospital, so it would make no sense to send a loved one alone. But if it's important, let's say, for a child that both parents be there, if the circumstances are such, then that would certainly be acceptable, appropriate, and even, once again, a mitzvah to do under the general heading of Pikuach Nefesh. I'll tell you a situation that again, it's not a common situation, but it has come up, and I was familiar, personally involved with one situation like this not all that long ago. It was a person who was very ill and was possibly going to pass away on Shabbos, and they requested to see certain family members that weren't here. And the decision was made that these family members were called on Shabbos and drove from 30 miles away in order to be with this family member on Shabbos. So it was clear that that person was not going to survive this illness. It was at the end of a very, very long illness. But and it wasn't just that, well, you know, this is his final wish, so therefore we're going to call him up, and we're going to call these people up, and we're going to drive here on Shabbos. It was all, again, under that general heading of Pikuach Nefesh, because, again, nobody lives forever. So Pikuach Nefesh doesn't mean sustain this life forever. It means that if you can sustain this life for an additional moment or two, so then that's worth fighting for, and certainly would take precedence over Shabbos. So if this person, who's in a very, very sick state right now, in a very, very advanced state of an illness, and even slight, emotional trauma can tip the scales, so then we would certainly honor their request and bring the family members there, like we would do anything for this individual at such a state in that illness. And when it comes to going to the hospital, those are the situations that we just mentioned, that anyone and everyone who is appropriate should join the patient would go. Now, what happens sometimes is the person will be discharged from the hospital on Shabbos. This is a situation that comes up often, although I don't usually get asked the question on Shabbos, unless people are very prepared and they call on the way or they're there on Friday afternoon, which sometimes happens. If a person goes to the hospital Friday night and they didn't have a chance to stop by my house on the way, nor should they, as we've discussed, although that did happen to me just two weeks ago. knock on my door at 11 o'clock at night on a Friday night because someone had to go to the hospital, and it was a question of if they were discharged. It was just this very question, you know, who can leave? Who can leave and how, because we're going to have to check my holy name. So that's already, that's an interesting question. So who can leave the hospital? So I'm not comfortable going ahead and giving, answering this in one fell swoop, because there really are many, many different situations and they're somewhat complex. But let's say a couple of obvious things. If the person, the patient themselves, even if they're no longer in a state of sakana, or they were never in a state of sakana, but we didn't know, and they're discharged from the hospital, often there'll be still what we call a chos imo sakana. You know, the person, let's say, had a serious fracture, and it was now, so now it was set, and the cast is on, so now they're in a lot of pain. So clearly, let's go back to where we started, a chos imo sakana, which means we can certainly ask a non-Jew to drive this person home. Because driving a person home on Shabbos is only a, it would only be an issur rabbanan, because the non-Jew is going to drive. Assuming that it's within the tchum. So talking about holy name, Hackensack, it's not, I won't say definitely within tchum, but possibly. So let's just talk about those two local hospitals. So I can certainly have a non-Jew drive this person home. The Shechter told me when I discussed this with him years ago, I have it in my notes, it was November 2004, and I'm happy I have it in my notes, because when I looked in the books today, so I didn't see this, but Rosh Hashem said that anyone who's with this person can go home in the car. He said that there's no concern of Margaret Shurim when a guy is doing a malacha for a Jew for a whole Shem Bosakana. So basically, anybody who came along could get back in the car and go back home. The books that I looked in say it's better they should walk if they can. Okay, so that's number one. Let's say you're talking about an individual who is discharged an hour before Shabbos is over. So, right, they go to Shabbos afternoon, and the leg is set, and it's an hour to go. So then maybe it would be appropriate under certain circumstances to say, listen, you know, we'll just wait here another hour, we'll sit in the lobby, and then we'll take a taxi home at the end of Shabbos. So you have to look at the situation. However, if the patient is an elderly person, and prone to any infections, so then I think it would be wrong, irresponsible, and I had this question once when I asked the POSEC, but I'm glad that I was told this because this was my push. It would be wrong to stay there an hour. It would be wrong to stay there 10 minutes. We all know that the hospital is the worst place to be if you're sick, right? Certainly an elderly person is, you don't want to spend 1 minute in the hospital if they don't have to be there. So it would certainly be, again, it's certainly in the most general sense, something, people off Memphis, that would warrant even driving, but certainly at this point just having a non-Jew or a taxi drive this person home. I should mention, by the way, Holy Name Hospital, very helpful in this regard, and usually they allow the security on staff to just drive people home. You don't have to, you know, it's just a nice service that they've offered our community on a number of occasions. You don't have to come up with how am I going to get a taxi in the night. You just ask them and they know, and they're actually very, very cooperative in that regard. I just have a couple of other things in my notes. I know it's getting late. I don't want to call anybody too much longer, but just a couple of other situations that do come up. And I actually have a lot of other things in my notes that I didn't get to, but I think we have covered most of the basics. But this is one that I don't really have to discuss now. This is technically not Pikuach Nefesh, but I guess I want to make that point, which may be obvious, but I've received the question so many times that I think we need to remind ourselves that it's not Pikuach Nefesh. And that is that in a situation where there's a family member who's in the hospital or in a nursing home or in some situation, and I'm not there. I couldn't be there. I chose not to be there. Whatever the case, I had to be with my family. And something may happen on Shabbos. You know, they may not survive Shabbos. So I get the question often, you know, can I pick up the phone if it rings? So I'll tell you, probably should turn off my recorder when I say this, but what I tell people actually is, don't ask me what I would do, but no, you can't. That's because I'm, you know, recognizing that there's going to be a very strong and intense need for some people to pick up the phone, and I guess I'm validating that and acknowledging it by saying, you know, don't ask me what I would do. Then again, if you're asking, unless somehow you're picking up the phone could be helpful in this situation, if the doctor has a question potentially, which is very rarely going to be the case, where your input is necessary in order to determine whether or not this person is going to live or die, so then of course you should pick up the phone, you know, different than the doctor himself. You should, but if this is a question of being able to receive information on Shabbos, So then it would not be right if a person wants to put on their answering machine. And here, I've heard some people say, you know what, I'm pulling my phone off the hook. I don't want that pressure on Shabbos. Good. I could, certainly not opposed to that. If a person wants to listen to the answering machine, so then that's technically okay. But to pick up the phone in those situations, as curious as I may be, and as difficult as maybe not to pick up the phone, technically, again, unless there's even, once again, a small chance that I could somehow be needed, so then I would not be right to pick up the phone. And the last thing that I wanted to mention that I have in my notes here, just again, based on common questions that I receive often, there are people who, because of either the fact that they suffer from asthma or certain, you know, breathing disorders, sleep apnea, they have these machines that they use at night, either the nebulizer, the inhalation machines, or the all these different contraptions that are prescribed in these situations. So almost without exception in the situations that I just mentioned, they certainly can and should be used on Shabbos, because they're all, once again, which should be given at this point after our discussion this evening, all in the category of suffix tzoach nefesh. However, if and when it is possible to set them on a clock, so then, and sometimes that is the case. If you're dealing with a child, it's not always as easy, because the child's schedule is not always going to be as, you know, as in sync with yours as you like. If you're doing it with adults who knows that they need to use this machine every 3 hours, and you set it to go on and off, so all they have to do is lift up the mask and put it on their face, so that would certainly be better. But in a situation where that's not possible, or sometimes you pull the mask off and the machine resets itself, so then these machines could be used. If it could be turned on by a non-Jew, even better. If not, if you could put it on with a shinoi, which wouldn't in this case be your left hand. You know, that we sometimes think that any time I do something with my left hand, it's automatic considered a shinoi. That's not so. That's only by those malachos where, you know, I need to use a specific hand, or I can't carry, you know, writing is the best example. If I write with my left hand, I can't carry out that skill properly. So to turn on a flick on a switch with my left hand is not a shinoi. I have to do it with my knuckles. I actually heard somebody say once, I don't think he was serious, but the reason God made knuckles is so we can, you know, do certain things with the shinoi and shabbos. I don't think that's true, but I can think of some other few good things we can do with our knuckles. But that, you know, that would be considered a shinoi for this purpose. But these machines, which once again, I can't tell if there's actually an increasing trend, or it's just in terms of the questions that come my way, but it seems I receive more and more questions in recent years. I'm sorry? People with asthma, and okay, whatever it is, but I know I've received this question often enough, and I think it's kedai to just mention here that these machines can be used on Shabbos. And again, if the doctor says try to use it once a week, so I don't think it's right that Friday night should be your night. But if he says you should use it every night, then certainly Friday night need be no exception. Okay. At this point, I'd like to dismiss you, because you've been sitting for more than an hour, and that's a very long time. However, if anybody has any questions, you're welcome to stay and ask. And otherwise, I hope once again, as I said when we started, that we realize how important it is that we constantly review these dinim in our mind and think them through in advance. I think that even as the firemen always recommend that we have drills in our home and our kids know the proper procedures and what we do if there's God forbid a fire in the house. So it would certainly be appropriate in this regard as well to talk these things through with other family members, that they should understand how and when we should act in a certain way on Shabbos. And I think it's a point that children understand as well. I think it's something very inspirational about a child who can, on the one hand, see to the extent that their parent observes Shabbos at all costs, but yet has a great regard for the importance and the sanctity of human life, so that if there would ever be a clash between the two, so certainly human life would take precedence. So even if your child hopefully never has to see this, but they should understand it. They should understand the process. So this is certainly something that's worthwhile to review, not only with ourselves, but family members. Hopefully it shouldn't be necessary, but if and when we find ourselves in these situations, once again, a person should, you know, welcome and embrace the opportunity to participate in a very, very important mission to cross-reference.